Yeah, I don't know where to go with that last piece, honestly. I mean, my best friend these days, that wonderful Amazon device. Still, never mind, we continue ever onwards. And as Tessa Snott hasn't managed to get quite to the studio in time and Shaylee's on holiday, I need to make a decision. Oh, OK, I'll make a decision. Gabriella Peralta, what's the weather in Lincoln from Gibraltar from your perspective, please?
OK, so the weather in Lincoln is highs of 7 degrees centigrade, lows of minus 1 degree centigrade. After a cloudy start, there will be outbreaks of rain, sleet and snow.
Live from Gibraltar, with or without her faithful friend Frodo, it's time for Gabriella Peralta on the Midweek Drive Morning Edition.
And so we move over to a gentleman who's probably already sort of punching the with the joy and success of a Karen Bardsley own goal, meaning that the USA women beat the British, well, the English women, 1-0 from that point of view. So well done. You know, it's part of a double, clearly. And what better way to actually flip your logo and flip your archers to actually celebrate International Women's Day, that's very confusing, than providing the weather for Lincoln from Los Angeles, Phil Leonis.
Well, thank you for letting me know about sports scores. I didn't even know there was a match being played.
Oh.
And I should have, because what better way to celebrate International Women's Day?
Exactly.
Although, what an honor to be on the show with a truly international woman, Gabriella Peralta, who did such an extraordinary job giving you your weather forecast, that all I would like to mention once again is to take these winds seriously. It seems like there's going to be some strong winds late morning, early afternoon. So prepare for that.
It's the huge consumption of beans at the fast food restaurants that actually does it, of course. There'll be a mass shortage and people will panic in every sense of the word. I wasn't sure whether this was fake news, Phil. I don't know if it's hit your radar as yet, but a SoCal, to use the vernacular, Southern California, McDonald's, has the distinction of flipping its logo for International Women's Day. Is this not just brands hijacking gone crazy? Sorry.
I don't know. I'll look it up. I mean, if it was in USA Today, it's got to be true, doesn't it? I mean,
well, it's
I don't know.
Apparently the report was it was launched 6 hours ago. NBC Los Angeles actually carried this story of a McDonald's, the distinction of being the only one in the nation to have its iconic Golden Archer sign flipped upside down in honor of International Women's Day. Okay, well, I suppose it's a kind of statement. Anyway, moving on from that point of view. Gabriella, we're talking about internationalisation, clearly, and Gibraltar, once again, as one of my colleagues said a few moments ago whilst I was doing a wonderful thing called collecting the registers, was saying, oh, Gibraltar in the news as well because of the Brexit talks and various other things. Where are you sort of sitting on that in terms of the Gibraltarian Chronicle? Have you been connected with it? Are you following the whole thing through, or is it just a case of, well, we might as well all just sort of hand over to Spain right away?
What, Brexit?
No, the entire peninsula of Gibraltar.
Are you saying that we're following Brexit or International Women's Day? I'm not too sure.
Either. Whichever one you choose.
We're following both.
Yeah. Good.
We're following both. We had Women's Day event yesterday at the all-girls school yesterday, and they have events in town today, which I will be going to. And, of course, Brexit we follow thoroughly, just like any other press does.
Yeah, exactly, yeah.
Something that's very important to Gibraltar.
It's happening. That little sound was the sound of Tessa Snart actually not having a strange, bizarre laugh, but saying she's going to be slightly late to Siren this morning, but she'll be here soon. So that's nice. Anyway, as we continue onwards. Forgot to mention incoming facts for the show, and this applies to the listener and to both yourself, Gabriella, and Phil Leonis. We've got the breakdown of where Phil Leonis managed to score a 3-0 victory. I'll say that again, a 3-0 victory over Richard Fitzwilliams. I feel we have to mention it now because Richard will doubt this protest and say, well, he was kind of vacillating. Yes, he was vacillating, but Phil was quite clear. He said best picture would be The Shape of Water. It wasn't indeed The Shape of Water. Best picture as far as Richard Fitzwilliams was concerned. He said it was really too close to call, but he went for Three Billboards Outside Ebbing, Missouri. He then sort of qualified that by saying in a close race it could be The Shape of Water. Sorry, close but no cigar. The other victory was for Best Song. Phil quite clearly saying Remember Me from Coco, and Richard Fitzwilliams' line with respect to that was This Is Me from The Greatest Showman. And then finally, as though it wasn't enough to actually kind of just hammer home the scenario there, Best Cinematography, the other changing thing there, Richard had gone for The Shape of Water, whereas Phil had rightly said that after so many years waiting and not quite getting there, Roger Deakins for Blade Runner 2049 would actually win, and that's what effectively tied the thing. So I don't know if that resonated in Gibraltar, but that's the score effectively, which I think puts Phil 2-0 up over the full series. So the America's Cup, obviously that's yachting, this is the equivalent and much more prestigious Leonis Fitzwilliams Challenge, is currently being held in Los Angeles. So that probably should make at least page 2 of the Gibraltar Chronicle, I would have thought, Gabriella.
Yeah, definitely. It's impressive to at least get a couple of them right, because I don't follow it, so I wouldn't know. But I did watch Shape of Water, and I did think it was quite good.
And that's all you need, really. It was quite good. Because most Oscar Academy Award winning movies are, in some ways, quite good. To be fair, the majority of the others, they'd effectively have been honourable ties, because I think they were pretty much in agreement to work through that. Are you still celebrating, Phil, or is it just a case you're holding back until Richard joins us in a few moments?
Well, you know, it is tempered somewhat by the fact that you know, you're predicting things that you to win that you don't think are deserving. You just simply know they will win. So that always tempers the enjoyment. But let's not kid ourselves. They say that just to be nominated is a thrill, but to taste the sweet, sweet nectar of victory over Richard Fitzwilliams is no small pleasure indeed.
There you have it, you see, and the line will come in. I think Richard, who knows, he hasn't even let me know what movies he's going to be reviewing this week, so who knows what. I mean, he might just be in a pit of despair somewhere, a slough of despond, so to speak, but hopefully he'll be there. The other message was, Ian Lennox did instruct me last week, Phil, and I'm not sure whether you caught the podcast thing. He said he's finally after I think about 5.5 to 6 weeks thought of an answer to one of the questions you actually gave to him about the brothers and so on. He has actually got an answer now. He's been contemplating it. And I said, well, you might be able to deliver it to him directly. Depends whether he goes to bed after that. But either way, you know, the message is there. Ian Lennox has an answer.
I don't even remember the question. Is that bad?
It's what we call tying up narrative tropes, loose ends, and so on. We'll be hearing from Chizzy Akadulu, actress and former Holby City star, about her favourite Cats and Jessica Jane Stafford, because we've got just literally 1 day, no, 2 days, yeah, two. March the 9th is the day, the closing day, for you to nominate your feline friend in the UK, sadly. I do actually cover the tale of Fuzz Aldrin in the piece, Phil, but regrettably, because Fuzz is a citizen of the United States, he's not eligible. She's not eligible. Almost a gender realignment. I mean, she's just had her esophageal tube removed. You don't want to go for gender realignment surgery, surely. Although, do you own Britain's Best Cat? And you can enter for the National Cat Awards. Can I apologise, Gabriella, because Frodo might have been a bit upset about that. Sorry, Phil, did you want to respond to that?
He likes cats, I think.
Yeah.
I just think the question should have a second part to it. It's not just do you own Britain's Best Cat, but is it possible that Britain's Best Cat owns you?
Good point.
Ooh, and surely as part of International Women's Day, Fuzz should be allowed as an international cat.
Whoa.
Whoa. And a woman.
Indeed. Indeed. We're going to play the International Women's Day exemption. Alex?
To the cat, yeah. To Fuzz. She can do it.
So many members of Team Fuzz are on your fair island, Alex. So
yeah, well, clearly we'll have to...
An honorary CBE or whatever the... is that right? Is that what a cat would get? I don't know. Cat of the British Empire?
Nice.
I don't know.
I think that would work well. We need to raise this clearly with the Cats Protection League, founded in 1998, and indeed this grand event which takes place at the Savoy in London, and we've been covering it for the last few years. This is the tenth year, actually, of the fabulous Feline National Cat of the Year Awards. Right, so Frodo, what sort of consciousness is he in, Gabriella?
He's out for a walk with my dad, so I think he's very awake.
He's out for a walk with your father, so that's great. Yeah, I suppose, actually, if he was asleep when he's actually walking, he could, of course, be sleepwalking, or he could be a zombie pug, either one of those two things.
Well, he doesn't want to walk because of the rain, so he's kind of having to be dragged out.
Oh, that's okay. Do you take Fuzz for walks at all? Because obviously he's been on the road with you over the last few weeks and so on, Phil. So, I mean, does she go on the road? I mean, or does she actually walk?
We have not ever taken her for walks. She, because she was stunted at her birth because of her rather traumatic origin, she's a tiny cat. Even at full strength, she's 7 pounds. That's how small she is. So a decent-sized squirrel would win a fight with my cat. Well, she's so gentle. So we have to be very careful about that. And I think also in the wake of, this illness that she's beat, I think we want to be as careful with her immune system as possible. That said, Alex, I finally, just this week, watched the 1974 Oscar winner for Best Actor. Deservedly going to Art Carney, who beat the likes of Jack Nicholson in Chinatown and Al Pacino in Godfather 2. It was a movie called Harry and Tonto, and it was about a retired gentleman who realizes there's nothing left for him in New York, and he goes on a cross-country road trip with his cat. And am I inspired? Oh, you bet you. Not just to go on a road trip again with Fuzz, but to retire. So, there you go.
Well, at the end of the day, you know the tale, Phil. LA directors never die, they just fade away. Sorry. He will never fade away because he's part of the Midweek Drive. Phil, would you like to put those last two questions to Gabriella Peralta in Gibraltar on International Women's Day, providing the perfect launch to the programme today?
To our resident international woman, Gabriella Peralta, did you enjoy your telephonic link with us this morning?
Yep. I feel like I've supported women internationally everywhere today.
And she's not been doing it upside down, unlike those fast food restaurants in the States, which is great. At least I don't think so. You're not standing on your head, are you, Gabriella?
No.
No, it's good.
No, firmly on my feet.
Very good. sorry, carry on, Phil. Next one.
Can we look forward to hearing your dulcet tones again a week hence?
Yes, I will. Thank you. Paid my dues time after time. I've done my sentence but committed no crime, and bad mistakes I've made a few. I've had my shelves and kicks in my bed, but I've come through. I need to go home.
And everything that goes with it, I thank you all.
it's been no bed of roses.
I can see the scenes now in Los Angeles, that the crackerjack fire flares have been going up, the confetti's been sprinkling down. I'm sorry, Richard Fitzwilliams, we just have to grin and bear it. It was Phil Lynas 3, Phil Lynas 3, Richard Fitzwilliams 0.
Where was the third one?
Where was the third one?
I thought it was two.
Ah, well, let me just put you to your mind at ease once again as Phil continues his celebrations in the background. We have a winner for Phil for Best Song, Remember Me from Coco, Best Picture, The Shape of Water, and Best Cinematography, Roger Deakins for Blade Runner 2049. Your best song.
Ah, that was the third, was it? Yes, I can only say that. Well, I have to admit that Best Picture, I went with my heart, not with my head, but I did hope to the end that Three Billboards could do it. I didn't think that it would, simply because I felt that a story as quintessentially American as that, directed by Martin McDonagh's British-Irish, he hadn't got, as we all know, a nomination for Best Director. Only two movies, of course, have in recent decades, one without it, but it was worth backing. I loved The Shape of Water, and having said that, I gratefully and gracefully concede, because I did think what I would be very interested to hear is if Phil agrees with me on the way the ceremony was handled overall, because I mean, I think that it was a tough one to carry off, and we've seen the most disastrous ratings. I mean, the previous year, I think, was the worst since 1974, and it's gone down by about a fifth. But nonetheless, if Hollywood want a stage to look gorgeous, like some sort of Renaissance palace or something similar, they certainly succeeded in that. And, of course, they had the tough balance with the Me Too and the Time's Up protests, and how to handle that within a ceremony where you weren't dressing, so to speak, in as the Globes and the BAFTAs had. I think that overall they pulled that off well enough. Jimmy Kimmel seemed to me a pretty good host. Not all his gags worked, but a lot of them worked. And it is a fantastic fashion fest, though I was surprised that more weren't wearing the hashtag Me Too or Time's Up pin. It seemed to me that as a seductive celebration, you had all these, pushed every nostalgia button in the that you could possibly think of with all these clips and so forth. It, as a show, it worked well as far as I was concerned. I am aware that every single award, or practically every single award, and I didn't greatly like This Is Me from The Greatest Showman, but I just thought the fact the film was doing so well, I wish I had an investment in that movie. It's done amazingly. I just might swing it. It does seem to me that it's interesting to see 10 years before the centenary, and that will be one hell of a super califragilistic expialidocious super spectacle. What will they think up then?
Well, I think the show is finally over. I will say that. I mean, the Oscar telecast, though it had charms, boy, it was a long one. It was really long, and I know people say that every year. But my, it was a long, long show. I do think Jimmy Kimmel is an excellent host for that particular award show. And I think making it a permanent part of his career would be good all the way around. It brings out the best in him. And I think he elevates the show and sets a nice tone for it. That speaks to many different ages without speaking down to any of them. I think that the low ratings were to be expected on a couple of fronts. One, I think the year before it was a very political show in the wake of the presidential election, and I don't think anybody, even people who are very opposed to our current president, I don't think they want particularly to tune into the Oscars and hear political rants. That said, I think when the word gets out that this show was actually quite touching, quite inspiring, that for the most part it wasn't political, rather it was a show that espoused decency and humanity and dignity and equality and diversity and inclusion, those are things that will relieve a lot of people who would say, hey, I would like to watch that show. But historically, the biggest thing any Oscar show has going against it is if the front runners were not box office successes. And indeed, combined Three Billboards and The Shape of Water barely exceed $100 million at the domestic box office combined. That means fewer people saw these movies than watch an average hour of television here in the United States.
Let's just hold.
So not particularly popular.
Just hold it there momentarily, gentlemen, because we have a third part of the important coordination has just joined us in the studio, a regular contributor to the monthly Star Trek magazine and ace senior lecturer at the University of Lincoln, where he's looking after the creative writing postgraduate course. Chris Downes, welcome back to the Midweek Drive Morning Edition. How are you?
Good morning. It's lovely to be here.
Been listening to Richard Fitzwilliams and Phil Lynas. I won't say this any longer because it hurts too much as a solid British soul. Phil Lynas actually thrashed Richard Fitzwilliams in the Oscar predictions 3-0.
Oh, what a word to use. Truly scandalous.
I didn't realize it was a competition. It was a prize invite.
I totally agree on the points that you make regarding the inclusivity of the show. I mean, that was very, very carefully handled, and I thought, for example, Daniela Vega, the first transgender presenter, I mean, the mix, so to speak, that we had, the diverse mix of presenters, and also choosing a balance in the show that made you feel that it was a diverse show, though, as I remember, almost all the winners were, in fact, white, but the facts are that there were far more.
Richard, I would have loved if Daniela Vega had actually not only been nominated for Best Actress, but had won. I thought it was that powerful.
Oh, I was going to say, funnily enough, when we're coming to Fantastic Women that I've got scribbled here, if only it had been up for Best Picture. And she, I totally agree. It was a remarkable performance. It was so good to see her. Accepting the fact that I've got to bring this up, it's an old wound, but I have to say, you were mentioning the box office of what became the top runner 6 months ago. We were thinking in terms of Dunkirk. That was a terrific, it was a triumph at the box office, and it's extraordinary. Three technical awards, we were expecting that, just as we're expecting costume for Phantom Thread and hair and makeup for Darkest Hour. This was no surprise. But the problem, it's sad that Dunkirk became a British story and something that simply didn't set the Nile alight, so to speak, as epics have in previous years. Also, a film like The Post, I mean, just buried.
Let's just momentarily hold that. Chris, did you see the Academy Awards?
Yeah, I did.
What were your thoughts?
Well, a couple of points I'd like to pick up on there. First of all, the whole international element, or the sort of diversification element. Yeah, great. Coco, don't forget Coco, Disney Pixar's Coco, you know, entirely set in Mexico. Obviously trying to fly the flag and redress the balance as much as possible.
At least there wasn't a wall in there.
Absolutely.
Not
entirely set in Mexico. What do you mean, apart from the Village of the Dead? Yeah, fair enough, yeah.
Yeah, the Land of the Dead. Technically they don't...
Is that a Mexican Land of the Dead? Is it exclusively Mexican Land of the Dead?
It certainly was in the Bond movie.
I don't know if your Mexican passport works or even is needed in the Land of the Dead.
I don't know. I don't know. Sure. I think as long as some...
I've actually read that the land of the celebration that we saw in the Bond movie, which I always thought took place, has in fact taken place since the Bond movie, but wasn't one that was traditional. That the Bond movie invented it. Is that true?
I think it embellished it a little bit. I think it was like a development.
There was a polish.
There was a polish.
That's a bit like saying that the Live and Let Die sequence of the celebration of funerals there was just a fictitious creation by Bond.
I just thought that went on every day, really.
Baron Samedi.
Baron Samedi definitely exists because it's the whole voodoo thing. The other point I was going to make about Dunkirk, for those of you who've been watching,
Phil, please, radio discipline here. Let's have Chris have his little say, and then we'll come to you.
Sorry, I can't hear with my headphones.
Oh, Lord.
I apologise.
I'm having trouble hearing too. For some reason I can hear Richard, but I'm having a hard time hearing Chris.
That's the story of my life, quite frankly.
You see, this is savouring your victory, Phil, that therefore you're being selective.
I just wanted to make a point about Dunkirk before, unfortunately, I have to go. Mm. But if you cast your mind back to Memphis Belle, which I was an extra in, believe it or not, because I'm that old.
That's a good film.
It's a good film.
At the wrong time.
Well, it's a good film if you want to completely ignore, you know,
history.
History and the reason why it was originally going to be a Lancaster crew, but they couldn't get the financing, so it ended up being Memphis Belle, which is based on the documentary, so on and so forth. But the point I'd make is, I don't think it's a bad thing to say that Dunkirk is a very British film. I think it's a very good thing to say. I mean, I think it is probably one of the best films I've seen in the last 10 years. I love Christopher Nolan with one or two exceptions. The thing I love about Christopher Nolan is that he doesn't really care whether you keep up or not. You know, you paid your money. If you can't keep up with it, well, the door's over there, quite frankly. I thought it was a very, very...
Much like Phil Learness in many ways.
Well, absolutely, yeah.
Can't keep up, the door's over there.
Exactly, yeah, get over there.
Incidentally, I just wanted to make the point, when I said that it was a very British film, a British story, I wasn't being derogatory.
I fully appreciate the point of view.
That unfortunately it did, well, as you saw, I would have thought Christopher Nolan, who's been out of awards before, as we all know, he's never won anything significantly as far as
Neither had Roger Deakins before Blade Runner 2049.
And isn't that he's been up about 14 16, times.
18, 14,
what about Hoyte von Hoytema? I mean, Dunkirk, you see, this is... But the point I was making with Dunkirk was that, unfortunately... Despite a huge box office gross, I think it's something like 600 million or something in that direction, and critical raves, that did not appeal to voters either at the Globes or indeed at the BAFTAs.
No.
But bear in mind, Richard, I did say, from my perspective, it was very much the weakest movie Chris Nolan's ever done. But anyway...
We disagreed strongly on that.
I found myself disagreeing with Alex on air. Shocker.
About it being a British film... you know, or too British. I don't think it was too British. I think more specifically, it had a problem in America because America doesn't know history that doesn't directly involve America. And so there was nothing that was particularly British about it. It simply pointed out here a lack of our knowledge. And I heard time and time again from people who would come out of screenings, industry screenings here, that they didn't understand the battle, they didn't know anything about it, and therefore it was hard to generate
subtitles
the kind
to
of momentum behind its Oscar campaign.
That's very sad, Phil. That is very, very sad. And all I can say is that I did have my own Dunkirk, as it were, a moment when I started asking very large numbers of people. The moment I met them, I started asking because I realized that I was on a loser some months ago.
And they said it was rubbish.
No, they did not. Oh, that is a scandalous. I rely on you to misrepresent.
I'm going to have to leave the studio.
You know, I'm
outraged.
They were not enthusiastic. There was no central character with which they could identify. They said they didn't feel that the scale of it came across. And the fantastic way I thought it was edited, the land, sea, and air in different time zones, appealed to critics. And people often went to see it. Some liked it. But one felt that if you were rating it in with nine films and so forth, and that even was in Britain, that it would not certainly not have won. And there it is. I mean, we had Get Out, Lady Bird, The Post, Wonderful Call Me By Your Name. There were many riches. One of the things I liked about the ceremony was that there was so much that we could cheer about, so many good films, and also Three Billboards and Shape of Water. So, you know, there's a lot to be thankful for. But that was somewhat of a shock.
Alex, be gentle with Richard about Dunkirk. Okay. After all, Richard is doing a marvelous job keeping a stiff upper lip in the wake of his really disastrous performance in our head-to-head Oscar competition. and also, Richard is suffering the wound from finally learning that James Bond films are not, in fact, documentaries.
There you go. Well,
it's also the case, you see. Mind you, I have to say that the next one better be better than the last one, as far as Bond is concerned. Perhaps they could learn something from Black Panther, which is breaking every box office record known, as almost doing so.
Well, moving on, Chris.
You almost felt it, by the way, was mentioned so often in the Oscar ceremony. I mean, the diversity theme, this was the movie to catch it, not Roman J. Israel, the Squire, or whatever. I couldn't help feeling that Black Panther might somehow, by some sleight of hand, have been one of the contenders.
Well, on the what's happening in the studio front, Chris Stout has indeed now left the studio, so shocked was he about the comments made about the movie that he appreciates. Maybe it's because he was an extra in Memphis Belle, but he's gone off there.
Memphis Belle, incidentally, was an extremely good film. It came out in the wake, as I remember, of the first Iraq War, and unfortunately it was I think it bombed at the box office. It was well made, but it was very... good. It was integrity, I thought, and very touching when that poem is recited. I know that I will meet my fate somewhere among the clouds above.
Meanwhile, we can actually give a little hint in terms of what's happened in the studio since Chris Stowers has left, because...
Clinton has now officially been put on the broadcasting map, with Tessa Snart taking midweek drivette duties to a whole new level.
Good morning, Tessa.
Good morning.
Have you followed what's been going on? Because it's been a three-way dynamic between a whole variety of...
Only folks. Since I got here. I've been taking it all in and listening. But yeah.
It's been quite extraordinary.
It has. Quite extraordinary.
Yeah. Starting off with Gabriella Peralta and International Women's Day, of course.
Oh, yes, of course.
Because, as we know, if it wasn't for Gabriella Peralta and your good self, no International Women's Day. There is an International Men's Day. I think it takes place sometime in the period of November.
Right, okay.
A specific date before it ends. Yeah. Phil, have you got any other sort of concluding lines for Richard? Because we don't have any time to do any movie reviews at this particular stage. We have to move on and progress, really.
I think, in fairness, we ought to maybe next year make it a two-pronged competition. The very least I should have to do is predict the major nominee or the major winners for the BAFTAs.
Can I just ease back a little bit? Because you said exactly the same thing one English year ago. And nobody had anticipated, as indeed Richard Fitzwilliams would said, because he was up for it. And I first say, Richard, you were up for the BAFTA predictions. You sent them through, etc. Unfortunately, Phil was close to death's door then. It was an illness that struck, so he was taken out this year. So I'm just hoping, I mean, I'm happy. I mean, I'm sure Richard is happy to say, yeah, we should go twofold. I mean, Tessa, what do you think?
Have we done some predictions? Because obviously I've missed the highlights here. I've missed it all. I think I recall Phil maybe saying something, you know, yesterday evening. Let's have a look.
I'm giving you Tessa because...
I'm behind.
Yeah, exactly.
I'm very behind.
The challenge was set the Academy Awards ceremony for Richard Fitzwilliams, consummate film critic, to actually come up his predictions. And for Phil Leonis to equally match those, the ticks that I've actually put on are the ones that Phil scored over Richard Fitzwilliams, where Richard was incorrect with Best Picture, Best Cinematography, and Best Song.
Right.
Everything else they agreed on.
Oh, okay.
So I'm sure
there was something, you know.
We can build on that, as Kim Jong-un might possibly say. We can build on that. So, Richard, I'm sure you would endorse the fact that Richard has the opportunity to comment on the BAFTAs as well, but hopefully he will be in a fit state to do so, because clearly he held back. He held back his troops this year. He was unable to take part. And therefore, save them for a merciless spanking, really, of the Fitzwilliams Meister in terms of ruse teams from that. Are you still there, Richard? Oh, of course he's still there. I'd faded Richard's microphone down, so he's probably chipping in with all of that.
He's probably been talking away, and we'll never know.
He's just finishing his review of A Wrinkle in Time, for crying out loud.
It was indeed A Wrinkle in Time. Richard, do you agree with that? Is that a fair comment that we'll hopefully let Phil do the BAFTAs as well next year? If
I think that's an excellent idea, because I think it's a fun competition. And as I say, I knew perfectly well that Three Billboards was unlikely to win, but it was the best of those movies that was likely to. It was the better. I thought it was a superb script and wonderful performances, and I wish Woody Harrelson had actually won for Best Supporting Actor, I have to say, as well. I knew he wasn't going to. I mean, one of the problems that everything that is predicted wins, it's true, it doesn't turn on the audience, but on the other hand, I did feel that because of the alternative vote, there was the tensions went through the entire evening when Best Picture was coming up. We simply didn't know.
At least they got the right envelopes this year, and they didn't have Ricky Gervais, yeah. So, you know, all's good.
Well, Ricky Gervais you don't want anywhere. Jimmy Kimmel, absolutely. I thought he was excellent. He must do it again. I hope he does it regularly. He could do it as often as Bob Hope, as far as I'm concerned, because he's simply got presence, and he's got a very good sense of humour. And I was amused, by the way, this business of having tourists in the auditorium last year, and you pop into a cinema this year. It just adds a bit of a flavour to it.
Squirt those hot dogs. Squirt those hot dogs now. Squirt them as we say, squirt your hot dogs. Phil, are you able to actually stick around for a bit of Ian Lennox, or is that a case of it's getting to 20 to 1 in the morning, and really I do need to have my beauty sleep, particularly when we're doing a feature on the programme talking about how folk are actually not getting as much sleep as they possibly need?
There is not enough beauty sleep in the world to help me, Richard, but Alex, but I just saw that I am down to 4% battery on my phone. So
go.
I fear it is going to cut out before I get to hear Ian's answer anyway. So please have him set the stage with the question I posed to him 6 weeks ago and deliver the answer so that I can enjoy it on the podcast version.
Excellent. We will do that. Okay. Would you like to wrap up, though, by asking Richard those last two final questions for today?
Richard, I know it wasn't pleasant, but did you at least have an interesting telephonic link with us today?
I appreciate the language that you've so kindly decided to use to describe it, and I would answer in the affirmative.
And can I look forward to a more pleasant, friendly discussion a week from now?
Well, of course, we can, you can, but can Alex, with language he was using, it's so extreme that I can only say I'm unsure.
I can sense a complaint going into Ofcom, honestly, on this one. Anyway, Tessa will be with us, Phil will be with us, all manner of things will be happening. Richard will return, which is all good, and Ian Lennox is coming up after Madonna.
Your dreams are made inside your love parade. It's a holiday. my, this is your lullaby. Sugar plum fingertips, kissing your honey lips. Close your eyes, sleepy head. Is it time for your bed? Never forget what I've said. Hang on, you're already there. Close your eyes and you'll be there.
Always nice to have some twiddly bits at the end. Well done, Madonna. Well done, Jesse. Well done, all. Well done, Phil Dearness. And as Phil said, he's quite fascinated to find out what exactly was the question that Ian Lennox now actually has the answer to, even though his battery power is gone, so he couldn't stay online for that, you know, unanswered thing about what was Ian's question, what was Ian's answer to the question.
I'm quite intrigued.
Yeah, we're all... Ian Lennox, do you know what the original question was, and do you want to share the answer? Do you want to tease ahead?
I'm in a remarkable position, not only knowing not what the answer is, I don't know what the question was.
Oh, no, he's forgotten it as well now.
What was the question?
I should clearly have actually rerun the thing from last week when he said, oh, when Phil Linus is on again, can you tell him that I have the answer to his question? Which I duly
did. Oh, Phil Linus, yes, I'm sorry.
Oh,
yes,
there you go.
Yes, I know now, yes. he asked me about a book I wrote and how I created the silence in the book called The Brothers. Mm-hmm. It was the early part of the book he's talking about, I think. And... the answer was that basically, first of all, in small communities you can have loud silences. They're more intense because the crowds are all close together. So rows are, you know, amplified and silences are amplified. And also, my style of writing is to create an atmosphere, which I try to make the... Well, I try to write the pictures, really, so that the reader is... sort of almost like living in the house, you know? And well, so that's why you felt the silence.
I hope, Phil, if he's either listening now, probably won't be able to
hear. If you can make it sense of that.
Yeah, well, yeah, well said. Well said indeed. But as we look at the script and schedule here, we see it's Ian Lennox, writer/producer, with more Tyneside tips for Tessa. Yes, it's now ours. It's now literally about...
Oh, you've been and gone?
No!
No, this weekend.
I
go tomorrow.
Yes.
Oh, well, I'm travelling down in the morning.
Oh, right. I'm having a birthday party in about 6 weeks. If you've been up there and you could have come.
So just stay over or go up again. You know,
there we go.
You probably wouldn't have wanted to come back then, or Tessa. So it's just
No. I'm actually quite upset because I don't think
I'm going to... party is something. No, sorry, go on.
No, that's okay. I don't think I'm going to have a lot of time to see the city because my schedule is quite packed for each day.
Now, where are you working for? Are you working from BBC or...?
The Sage.
Right, but you're in the centre, basically. Well, you're actually engaged, so... all you got to do is walk across the Millennium Bridge, which is a lovely little walk across bridge across the Tyne, and you're down to the quayside. And I mean, Newcastle is a very small city,
right? Okay.
And if you walked, say north from the Sage for half an hour, you'd be out the other side.
It's not as small
really
as Lincoln, Ian. You know, Lincoln's a smaller city in terms of.
Is it? Well, I don't know.
I do like a good walk, though.
It's uphill mountains, I'm telling you now. So.
That's okay, I don't mind. Steep hill here.
It means it's downhill on the way back.
these folk who've never made that transition across the boundaries and the counties from Tyneside to Lincolnshire don't realise that there was a steep hill in Lincoln.
There is.
Called because, as its name suggests, it's quite steep.
It is quite steep.
And, you know, the comparison to what we're seeing with respect to Lincoln is more. Anyway, so those are your tips then for Tessa, Ian. Go across the bridge and
Across the bridge, up. Walk up, find Grey Street and walk up that to where it's just after the theatre. And then somebody will direct you towards the theatre. The theatre's on Grey Street, which is one of the most beautiful streets in the country.
Oh, lovely. No, I will definitely check that out. I'll get some pictures and put them
up. You can Google it and you'll see.
Yeah.
Can you do that these days?
I love to take my own pictures and then put them on Instagram. I'll get my own take and then you can see.
You can see what I'm talking about.
Yes, yeah. The Sage, I did look the Sage up and it looks beautiful. It's a lovely venue, so.
Yes.
Yeah.
And it's next to the Baltic Art. I don't know what to call it now. But that was an old flour mill during the war.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Oh, and
it's converted it. It's now one of the most avant-garde art galleries in the country, I think.
Okay.
There's a certain London art critic who used to complain because he thought it was, the people up here couldn't possibly understand it. He had to come up here to view the pictures. Brian Sewell.
Not that Ian's bitter at all about Brian Sewell's negativity when it comes to the North East, because Ian, as I've frequently said, they just do not know of what they speak. That's the whole thing. You can't sort of, you have to forgive the Southerners. You know,
somewhere on the internet is an amazing lampoon of them. He was a highly clever, highly intelligent chap, but he had this very, very upper class accent, and there's a clip of him. It's not him, but it's somebody taking him here, asking, "Do you know where Gateshead is?" I get a train to Newcastle, do I? like this.
Fair point, actually. I must point out to Tessa that it's technically Newcastle, not Newcastle.
Yes.
Right, okay, Newcastle.
Saying Newcastle is a bit like the faux pas Midwick Drivett's had with William Sitwell a wee while back, when she was referring to pasties as opposed to pasties.
Oh, okay. I do say Newcastle, I do say pasties.
A young reporter on the journal, I used to take an interview of graduates, and there was one lad who'd come from Oxford University, and he was very cocky. For some good reason to be, actually, he was very, very, very bright bloke. But the news editor decided to teach him a lesson, so he sent him up to the west end of Newcastle to do an interview. And the poor lad came back, white faces. I didn't understand a single word he said.
Yeah. Aww. Well, that just says a great deal about the lack of education in Oxbridge environment.
We're all bilingual up here, you see.
Ian, we've got a piece on the Cats Protection League and National Cat Awards coming up in a few seconds. We'd like you to stick around and listen to this, if that's possible, and then come to you both sort of just before and just after the news. So are you ready and set to listen to the words of Chissy Akadulu and Jessica Jane Stafford talking about, as I say in the little piece which we recorded yesterday, cats? Clearly, those of us who have been part of Team Fuzz and have actually helped the rescue cat in Los Angeles over the last few years, with our ace director Phil Leonis, will be very much ahead of the upcoming cat awards that are here. Sadly, Fuzz, being a citizen of the United States, can't actually enter, so she's going to have to wait for it from that particular perspective. But for Hero Cat, for Most Caring Cat, for Forever Friends, Outstanding Rescue Cat, and the Purina Better Together Award, yes, we're delighted to say that we've got literally just days before the nominations will actually close, entries will close for those nominations on Friday. And to address that and talk about them, we've got two fantastic individuals. First of all, the amazingly awesome Chizzy Akadulu. How are you, Chizzy?
I'm good, thanks. How are you?
Marvellous. Very good indeed.
Wow, awesome. Thank you.
And indeed the equally perfect. Sorry, I couldn't resist it. I know. Jessica Jane Stafford, how are you, Jessica?
Oh, I love that. Thank you very much.
Excellent.
Good, thank you.
Chizzy, can we come to you first? Because clearly, being a celebrity ambassador with respect to the Cat Awards and so on, what is it about cats in particular that have appealed to yourself?
Cats.
Mm.
are fiercely independent, but also fiercely loving. And I think people who don't have cats don't realise just how loving and affectionate they are. It's on their terms. And, you know, they don't want your to give you affection every minute of the day. But when they do give it to you, it's pretty unbelievable.
Speechless. Speechless, isn't it?
I am speechless. Yeah. I'm thinking about my cat now. It is absolutely unconditional. And I just adore him so much.
Well, certainly we mentioned Fuzz Aldrin, who was a rescue cat in Los Angeles that kind of internationally we've been supporting for it from that perspective. And the thing that Phil Leonis has been saying is exactly that, unconditional love. Similarly with our writer, Ian Lennox, who has two cats up in Tyneside, Ollie and Obo, who, again, sort of connect with that. I mean, Jessica, would you say that echoes your own experience of cats in general?
Sorry, say that again?
Your own experience of cats, the unconditional love that they
actually provide. Oh, yes, no, definitely. When I, my mum used to work for the Cats Protection, and she took in 32 cats in one go. That's a lot of feline. They were all girls, and I was about 5 years old at the time. So I grew up with a lot of cats, and to me, my family is not complete until I have a cat.
Well, clearly.
This is just what I'm used to.
Is that the Aristocats with 101 of them? We won't go there. This particular thing, I mean, I say we're approaching, it just seems only yesterday we were talking about the winners last year, and of course we were speaking in Lincolnshire with our very own cat winner here, who was winning the best hero cat. But it's March the 9th when owners actually can nominate their cat for one of these five categories that we've mentioned.
By March the 9th, exactly.
Yeah. So when you first saw these cat awards, I mean, Jessica, if I'm coming to you with respect to this, what did you think? Great, it's like the Academy Awards, but for cats, and therefore...
Yes, it's the Oscars of the cat world. Yeah. It really is. Do you know, I judged the awards last year, and it was such a fun event because everybody had a common ground. Everyone was talking about the cats, and everyone was just talking to each other. Everybody was talking about cats for the whole night. I was in my absolute element. It was a room full of crazy cat people. And we had booze, and we had food, and we had the awards, and it was brilliant. And I can't wait to see it again this year.
Well, I'm always impressed by the videos of the cats, because so many of the cats can't actually be there. Actually, no, cats can't.
Yeah, they're not available.
No. Yeah. So they've got other things to do from that line.
Yeah, they're busy. Yeah.
Precisely. And Chizzy, do you think that this, as I say, for cats is pretty much like the BAFTAs, but without the political speeches?
Yeah.
Okay. I'm not saying political speeches are wrong. I'm just sort of saying, you know, maybe you might have to sort of talk about, you know, not being speciesist or something on this particular sort of aspect from that.
Indeed, but they do slag off the dogs, though.
Yeah, I was going to try and avoid that, because clearly there is that notion of cats and dogs. Sometimes they can get on well, but it tends to be more of a rarity, I find. Really.
One of the judges last year, he got up on stage and he introduced himself and he said, "I just want to, you know, I'm more of a dog person," and the entire room were just clawing for why did you say that?
I'll have to redact my comment about not political, because clearly you've gone straight down that line there. That's as bad as opening up the wrong envelope. You know, it's hopeless. What's your favourite award, Jessica, for that? I mean, would it be Hero Cat? Would it be the Forever Friends?
I did the Forever Friends last year. This year I'm actually judging the overall award, so I'm quite excited about doing that one. I mean, I love all of them. You know, I feel like, who am I to judge? Because all cats are amazing. So I can't really pick a category, because the stories are all so incredible. And on some level, I can relate to all of them as well. The stories that we have are amazing. We had one hero cat last year who alerted their owner to a fire. I mean, how amazing is that? Mm. Another one who alerted their owner to a robbery. I mean, these cats really are real-life heroes.
Mm. Yeah. Mine just brings in dead mice.
Yes, but Chizzy, that's clearly because she recognises, or he recognises, that it's important to actually bring an offering to the goddess who's in his life, you see.
Oh!
That's the lie.
So sacrifice.
Yeah, exactly. Precisely.
He thinks I'm not eating enough, obviously. He's bringing me food.
Jessica, share with us your tale of Susie and Sally, because I gather you used to have two cats there. Let's channel the inner species for Susie and Sally.
Well, you know what? Susie and Sally were actually my mum and dad's cats. They got them before me and my brother were born. Right. So I was born into this family with two cats. And we just grew up with them. They used to sleep in bed with me. I'm one of those crazy ladies that lets animals sleep in bed with them under the cover, and I spoon them. So I grew up with these two cats, and then we had to have them put down when they were about 16. They got very, very old, got very, very sick. And do you know, it's the first time I've ever seen my dad cry in my entire life. So it was, you know, it was a big moment. And
And yeah, so they'll always hold a very special place in my heart. And do you know what? I'm trying to convince my husband to call our next two kids Susie and Sally, but well, it's not going down too well.
The message is out there. Who knows what could actually happen? Given the professions that you're actually both in, have you ever worked with cats professionally? Has it been a case of, you know, well, they can be quite difficult to train unless you actually have tuna fish to hand?
I find actors difficult enough to work with sometimes. Well,
if you've got some tuna fish, that's always good, I find. You know,
throw some tuna fish at the actor.
Exactly.
I don't think I've ever worked with...
Worked with dogs.
Yes, yeah.
And obviously children.
Yeah.
But no, never a cat.
No.
Well, clearly a screenplay has to be written to actually feature both of you in sort of lead roles. As maybe
just all cats.
Yeah.
Nice, exactly.
And a cat director. The cat editor.
I think we've started that hashtag meet meow too.
Exactly. Oh, look at
just a thought. How can people find out more details about these awards and how actually they can still nominate their own furry feline friends to actually enter into the National Cat Awards for 2018? What's the best place to go to?
So the best place to go to is cats.org.uk, and it'll have all the information on how to enter, sending the pictures and what to write and everything.
And of course the event itself takes place later on in the year. I think it's August.
Second of August.
Exactly, August time.
Savoy Hotel.
Exactly, the location is perfect. No, I won't go to use any more scenario, otherwise I'll be feeling ridiculous. Sorry. two final questions for both of you. Fine folk, have you had a reasonably interesting telephonic link with us today? Has it been okay for you guys?
A telephonic link? I didn't know what that was for a second. Yeah,
that's okay.
We're actors. Can you just, like, you know...
Yeah, it's all right. Break it down.
Properly,
motivation.
Yeah.
Motivation. We'll work through that whole process. It's great there.
I'm about to Google that. What, a telephonic link?
When I don't understand, I just look at Chizzy, like, right, all right. She looks at me and we just start shaking our heads.
And then I get on my phone and go on Google. What was it?
What does that mean?
Yeah. That'll work. I look at it as customer satisfaction, folks. That's the key thing. So can we prevail upon you to return post-OCAT Awards? Will you actually come back and share with us your experiences as well?
Oh, my gosh,
absolutely.
Yeah.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
Chizzy Akadulu, the awesome Chizzy Akadulu. It's only a matter of time before you get that Academy Award to go with Best Newcomer, Best Actress and the rest of those pieces. It'll happen, Chizzy.
Oh, well, thank you, sir.
And
thank
likewise,
you.
Jessica, you've already been in Los Angeles once for the Music Awards, so, you know, Best Supporting Actress and that sort of routine. You'll get another award before too long.
Thank you so much.
Jessica Jane and Chizzy Akadulu, many thanks indeed.
Thank you.
So fiercely independent, fiercely loyal. Does that describe Ian Lennox, Ollie and Obo? Fiercely independent, fiercely loyal.
Well, they are independent. I don't think cats are particularly loyal. But I don't know. I was listening to those two ladies talking, and if a cat sort of suddenly accepts you, because it's not like a dog which sort of licks and so faithful as your hunting partner sort of thing. It's a bit like being introduced to a beautiful lady who's very intelligent, far above you, and suddenly find that she accepts you. I feel like that's...
Very apt for International Women's Day.
You know?
Whereas
expect it from a dog, they leap all over you, lick your face, and demand a ting of a wolf.
I do think a cat does choose his or her owner. I think so. I think they make a house a home. We've always said that in my house. But
okay,
I think a dog is a man's best friend, isn't it? There is a different connection there.
Yeah, it is. Well, I think it's a genetic thing where they're hunting partners, right?
Yeah, definitely.
Because in the DNA, a cat wasn't. A cat still hunts things when he doesn't need the food because it's his instinct to do that.
I think they can be loving. I mean, I've got a cat, and he's getting old now, so he will come and sit on your knee and everything. But he does his own thing.
When my son-in-law comes to visit with my daughter, one of our cats jumps on his knee.
Oh.
Ian, hold that thought. We'll come back to it after the news and find out whether it actually jumps off again.
FM. Online. Mobile. This.
Wonderful. And the weather today for Lincoln, highs of 7 degrees centigrade, lows of minus 1 degree centigrade, a cloudy start with outbreaks of rain, sleet and snow. So a triple whammy there. We left on, obviously, the horns of a dilemma there. Was the cat going to leap on? Was it going to leap off? Ian Lennox, you're still with us. What was the situation with respect to the cat before we had to take those 2 minutes of interesting information from our IRN folk?
When the cats jump on Rob's knee, he never jumps on mine. Mm-hmm. And it's something to do, Rob says it's something to do with him being a vegetarian. And I don't understand that at all. But
cats are not vegetarian. Cats eat meat, so why? They see Rob as a source of food?
I think they see Rob as a no threat.
No threat.
They're non-carnival.
Yeah, I think animals sense things, don't they? They're quite clever, so maybe.
Yeah, I don't
maybe.
Know.
It's, we don't
know. Lots of just likes him and just likes me, I don't know.
all ways of wondering about life, the universe and such like.
right.
Or indeed,
right.
As we like to say,
putting together an audio show which entertains and educates the globe is a piece of cake. When you've got the Midweek Drive and Midweek Drive Morning Edition teams on the case for Siren 107.3 FM and sirenonline.co.uk.
Excellent. Which brings us neatly round, Tessa, for your chance to throw those last two questions, like a little kitten jumping on his knee, or not as the case may be, to Ian Lennox.
Yes. Well, firstly, thank you for some more tips for seeing Newcastle.
Oh.
Newcastle, I nearly said it. There we go. You put it in my
Newcastle.
Head. Now. Newcastle. But have you enjoyed...
Back us on the train.
I will do. Have you enjoyed our feline talking show today?
Yes, I have.
And will you be joining us again on the show next week?
I do hope so.
Don't forget, Ian.
You'll be an honourable Geordie or something.
Don't forget, Ian, tonight, 7 o'clock, if you're listening to sirenonline.co.uk, you can listen to an extra special bonus Sound and Country Vision. It's the show that was after the edition of the country show last year. It's a truly tremendous thing. It's got Tessa, it's got Lena Jane, it's got all sorts of things in. It's this evening on Siren Radio.